are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, Kings fans. Welcome back to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. This is your Sacramento Kings off-season hub as we count down the days to the start of training camp in September and then preseason at the beginning of October. The regular season begins in mid-October, but we still have the whole month of August until we get to any of that. So I'm promising you great content, great interviews, and a lot of fun to carry us through this next month. My name is Matt George. For those of you who are new, hello and welcome to this podcast. I am from Sports 1140 KHDK. That is the flagship radio station of the Sacramento Kings. I work there as an on-air talent and as a multimedia journalist and writer for the website. I put out a tweet earlier today asking fans about how they deem a successful season for the Sacramento Kings. I'm going to touch on that really quick, and then I have an interview to play for you from Tim Maxwell, Sactown Royalty. First off, I hope you enjoyed my interviews earlier this week with Grant Hughes from Bleacher Report. It was an absolute pleasure to be able to speak with him. If you haven't checked out, it's a two-part interview. Part one was on Tuesday. Part two was on Wednesday. I encourage you to listen to it all because it was great content, great Kings conversation. Gives you a really good, positive, and fair national media perspective. Again, thank you to Grant for taking the time. But today is Tim Maxwell, my good friend from Sactown Royalty. That is the blog that covers the Sacramento Kings, one of the best blogs out there for Sacramento Kings content. Tim Maxwell is one of the major writers for that blog, a personal friend of mine, and he and I always have fun going back and forth at each other on Twitter. We disagree about a lot of Kings stuff, agree about a lot of Kings stuff. Where we majorly disagree, though, is about his bad jersey and food takes. We're going to talk about that and so much more here in this interview coming up. But before we get to that, I wanted to share the context behind the tweet that I put out. So ESPN today released their projections for records, what the final records or win totals are going to be for each team. They have the Sacramento Kings at the last in the Western Conference with 25 wins. So I put out there, personally, I'm taking the over on that for a number of reasons that I'll share at a later date. But I put out the scenario, let's say, that the Sacramento Kings win 33 games this year, which ties the most they ever won with DeMarcus Cousins as the centerpiece of their franchise. And even though they don't have a 2019 first-round pick, 33 wins is probably good for a top-10 pick, but they get to 33 wins. So this young team without DeMarcus Cousins has the same win total in year two of this rebuild as they ever had with DeMarcus. Is that a successful season to you? I've gotten a lot of great responses, a lot of people saying no way, they want more, which I think is a little unrealistic. A lot of people saying it would be successful if it's the young players building to that point, not if Zach Randolph and Iman Shumpert are out there getting you some of those or 10 of those wins that you could have gotten or may not have gotten with De'Aaron Fox and Harry Giles and Marvin Bagley. I tend to agree and lean on that side too. So we'll talk about that in more detail next week on the podcast, but I wanted to put that out there. So if you are on Twitter, you can find it at MattGeorgeKHDK and you can respond to it there. You can also email me your responses, and those are great. I get emails all the time trying to respond to them as much as I can. Even a lot of them I'll share on the show. Share your Kings story with me as well, how you became a Kings fan. I love reading those and sharing those on this platform. You can email me mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. So some food for thought there. I let that mull around in your brain. Think about that a little bit as you enjoy this interview that I had with Tim Maxwell from Sactown Royalty. Again, a good friend of mine. I hope you enjoy this, and we'll come back on the other side. Tim Maxwell coming up with me next, just after this quick ad read. I always enjoy inviting this next guest on, Tim Maxwell from Sactown Royalty, someone that I consider to be a good friend in both the real life and basketball life. You can check out all of his great work at Sactown Royalty, a blog that I endorse all the time as probably the best blog out there that connects a fan base with an organization, and Tim Maxwell is a big reason for that. You can follow him on Twitter at TimMaxwell22 at any time to check out all of his great work, but I'm warning you, you're going to get some interesting takes from Tim Maxwell. He always is willing to throw out things from really bad food takes to interesting jersey takes. We're going to touch on as much as we can here today over the next few minutes. But Tim, it's good to have you back on Locked On Kings. Good to talk to you again, buddy. How you been?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Matt. Thanks for having me on. And I just want to clarify, I've never had a bad food take. Sports takes, yes. Food takes are all spot on.
Well, if you give me 5 minutes, I'll scroll through your Twitter feed and get all the bad food takes that I can possibly find here. But this isn't a food podcast. We might save that for another time. But I hate to break it to you, Tim. Yes, you have had some bad food takes. Bad sport takes we're all guilty of. I know I've had my hands full of them from time to time. But you put out an interesting one the other day that certainly got some Kings fans riled up a little bit. And I wanted to start with that because you have some explaining to do. The Los Angeles Lakers put out their new jerseys, and you are the one that came out with the take that those jerseys are better than any Kings jersey. Mind defending that and go into that in a little more detail?
Sure. Here's the thing. Right, we all hate the Lakers. I hate the Lakers. Everyone should hate the Lakers. Lakers fans should hate the Lakers. But their jerseys are clean. Now, that black stripe on the side that they had in the newest jersey is terrible. But I'll be honest with you, the vast majority of Kings jerseys over the years have been anywhere from average to bad. There's been a couple of good ones. I hated the city jerseys this year. I like the chainmail okay. But actually, myself and a couple other guys at Stacktown are actually working on an article right now to rank all of the Kings jerseys over the last 30 years or so. So you'll see that coming out soon. But yeah, I'm not a fan of most of the Kings jerseys. I think they're either overcomplicated or simplified. And I'm going to put something out there, and this might lose me several followers. It's okay. I hate the baby blues. Hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them.
So you're an anti even the flashback Sacktown or Sacramento Royals and the Kansas City Royals type jerseys that they'll roll out from time to time. Interesting. Well, here's one thing I will say. The city uniforms that they put out were not very good. They grew on me a little bit, but when we first saw, you remember when we first saw the drawings of them, and then
yeah.
I think NBA 2K was the one that leaked them for the first time, and you're like, oh, okay. Seeing them actually worn made me feel a little bit better. I can understand the baby blue take. What I can't understand is the all the Laker jerseys are more clean or better. Look, the Lakers yellow is iconic, and I can't believe I'm talking about the Lakers here on the Locked On Kings podcast, but the Laker yellow is iconic, and I actually love those jerseys, and I love the floor of the Staples Center that the Lakers always do. That being said, there is no purple Lakers jersey that they could ever roll out that doesn't look like they are scratching the bottom of the barrel of the scraps that the Kings left behind. Kings do purple better than anybody in all of professional sports, and you can't argue that, Tim.
I'm with you there. I don't like the Lakers purple, but the Lakers yellow is kind of a thing of beauty. Like you said, it's iconic, and I think the Kings, unfortunately, haven't had the opportunity to be iconic in their history.
All right, well, let's move on to another take. That was a little bit of fun to start us off here. We know you're not a Lakers fan, Tim, so nobody's hopefully coming knocking on your door with pitchforks. But there might be some fans potentially bringing pitchforks to you if they ever see you in public about your recent takes of Bogdan Bogdanović potentially being a piece you'd be willing to move in a deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves to bring Anthony Wiggins over. You were very vocal about wanting to see the Kings move Garrett Temple, not because of any vendetta against Garrett Temple, but you thought they could get some value for him. They ultimately did this summer, probably not the move that you totally wanted or expected or what you could have seen the Kings getting in return. But let's talk about this deal. You've somehow talked yourself into a Wiggins trade for the Kings, and you're okay with giving up Bogey to do it.
Yeah, and let me give myself this caveat. It's not the trade I would want to do, nor do I think it's the best move for the Kings. But if the Kings made the trade, I wouldn't be upset, as I would say 95% of the fan base. And here's why. Bogey's a great player. Love Bogey. Everyone loves Bogey. Him and Buddy Hield are our two best players right now, and I think they're our two best players for the coming years. They're both becoming restricted free agents in the same summer of 2020, which I put out there today on Twitter. So we're going to have to either pay both in 2 years, probably large amounts of money for both, and they both play the same position. My opinion is the Kings need a small forward, and they need one relatively soon. I think Bogey can fit in there, but I don't think he's a long-term solution there. So all of that to say, I don't think Wiggins is a perfect fit. I don't think he's a perfect player. He's not the player people thought he would become. And I know points per game isn't the greatest stat in the world to use, but he scored 24 points per game as a third-year player. I mean, yes, he's overpaid, but can you cash out a redundant asset like a Bogey who's, you know, getting paid $9 million a year, so he's not on a rookie-scale contract, and attain a player that could potentially be very, very good and fits a position of need? I would understand it from an asset evaluation standpoint. Again, there's other trades that I would probably prefer. You and I have talked on the side about like a Kent Bazemore trade, or maybe picking up TJ Warren or Evan Turner from the Blazers if you're getting a pick back. So it's not my favorite trade in the world, but I think, again, from an asset evaluation standpoint, you're getting a guy who fills a position of need. I think he's 23, so he's right in that age range we're looking for. And he could potentially become, you know, a number two scorer on a contender if he grows. And it's certainly a big risk. Probably more risk than reward, but sometimes the Kings need to make those moves.
So we had a conversation over Twitter on Wednesday, Tim, and we were talking about the likelihood of starting Bogey at the three, and I was sharing my reasons for why I think the Kings absolutely should do it. First and foremost, it doesn't matter who's starting. It matters who's on the floor at the end of the game, and I don't think there's any situation, unless there's an injury, that the Kings can get away with not rolling out a backcourt of Frank Mason, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and Buddy Hield to close out games, especially if they're trailing and need some scoring. Those three are the clear three most established players in their positions when the game is on the line towards the end, and I think they've earned the right to all three be on the floor together to close out games. That being said, why not start the three? I agree with you in terms of long-term fixes or long-term worries that Bogey at the three starting alongside Buddy and Fox isn't necessarily the best fix long-term, but in the meantime, in the short term for this next season, running the three out there, starting the three of them together, trying to win as many games as possible with those three as your main core, hopefully doing enough to attract a bigger name free agent in at the small forward position. A Tobias Harris is the guy that I threw out there. Something like that comes to mind. You pay him, you bring him in to start at three. Buddy continues to start at two. Fox continues to start at one. And then you bring a Bogdan Bogdanovic, who's going to be in his high 20s at that point, or late 20s at that point. Bring him off the bench, someone that can really do it all, and you can still work him into the lineup towards the end of games if you need him as well. I don't see that as a bad possibility.
Yeah, I don't see it as bad either. And I think the Kings have something like that in their plans. Here's where my concern develops. We didn't have a quality small forward last year. I mean, you can say Bogey was okay at that position, but it's not his natural position. He's a natural shooting guard, 6'4". So you didn't have one last year. Let's just say we go through this year and we have Bogey there and we have Shoop there, who's kind of a 2-3. You throw in, I don't know, Buddy Hield, play some three, some other guys fill in, that's fine. But now you've gone 2 years without a quality small forward option. And with a young core, I think the small forward position is becoming either the most important or the second most important position in basketball. That's where a lot of your big-time talent is in the league right now. Let's just say we go after Tobias Harris and he signs elsewhere. Now where are we at? Because everyone has space next summer.
Sure.
So yeah, I agree. Fox, Buddy, Bogey as your starters and your closers, I'm all for that. I'm not sure Dave Yeager's on board with that plan. He should be if he wants to keep his job. But like you said, long-term, sure, signed Tobias Harris. But if he's not there, now you're looking at a pretty strong downgrade or overpaying, or I honestly don't really know where you go from there without a pick.
Yeah, and ultimately, you do have to keep that in mind. GMs always have to be thinking 4, 5, even 6 steps ahead, and I'm not excusing Vlade or the Kings front office from stepping away from that or brushing that under the rug or putting it on the back burner and not worrying about it. To me, establishing an identity that you can bring a small forward, free agent, bigger name into is more important than worrying about how you're going to get that free agent next summer, which the reason why I bring that up, Tim, is because I think what we have yet to see, which is something that could be a major difference this year, assuming it takes place, is we really have yet to see the Kings roll out a system that has benefited, or let me put it this way. The Kings have yet to use a system that emphasized their player strengths rather than trying to plug their players into a Dave Yeager type system, right? I would love to see the difference from last year. You brought up they didn't have a true small forward last year to this year, now having not having once again a true small forward this year, if this is the lineup that they indeed roll out on opening night. Plug that hole by implementing a system that benefits Bogey at the three, working off the ball, a spot-up shooter, or working on the ball and running Fox off of screens. Things like that we have yet to see from Yeager and this Kings organization. Is that potentially enough to fill that void at least next year?
Yeah, it'll certainly help. And I think you and I both agree with some questions about Dave Yeager's system. I wrote a couple articles. If anyone listening wants to go read them, one's called Dave Yeager Needs to Join the Modern NBA, and the other one was called The Kings of Inefficiency. One I wrote after the season, one was during. And it just talks about the fact that the Kings play a very 90s flavor of basketball when their best young core players should be fitting into the modern NBA, at least most of them. So I agree that will certainly help. I mean, let's just be honest, getting Zach Randolph off the court and dropping his minutes from 25 to 7 or 10 per game will be another boost. You know, so there's, like you said, there's a lot of little things you can do to build up the team. And then if your biggest weakness is you've got kind of an undersized guy at the three, you can deal with that. I mean, I don't think anyone's expecting playoffs, so it's all about growth.
Right.
The question is, are we going to do any of those things, or are we just going to kind of continue with the rotation and the plans that we've had? And if that's the case, things are going to take an ugly turn next year.
So I'm looking it up because I don't want to. I want to make sure I don't get it wrong. 33 wins. Okay, good. 33 wins was the most the Kings got with DeMarcus Cousins in their roster, or as a part of their roster, as their centerpiece. Is 34 wins, or even matching that 33 win total, something that you think is out of the question to expect from this team with the fact that the West has gotten better? LeBron's here now. You're going to be facing him four times a year instead of two. Is 33 an unrealistic number to shoot for this team, or for a 27 average win team, let's call them that, around the 27-28, can you see them stealing another 5-6 wins from teams that quite frankly take them for granted?
I think I expect the Kings to win around 30 or 32 games. You know, they won 27 last year. They were projected. They should have won, according to all of the numbers out there, 24 games, and then they were clutch in a couple of situations. I'm more about the real numbers than projections, so they won 27 games. 32 means they had some pretty decent growth. If you think about it, the Lakers last year, who I know LeBron joined them, but even before LeBron joined, they were kind of talked about as, hey, they're making a lot of progress in their rebuild. They won, I think, 35 last year, so I think 32 is a realistic goal, 5-win improvement. Even though the West improved, you know, the East got worse, and teams always fall apart. Teams you never expect to fall apart always fall apart. People are always bad. You know, if the Wolves trade Jimmy Butler and decide to get rid of Wiggins, that's, you know, another lottery team. So I think you also have to take into account that the Kings aren't going to be tanking this year at all, and obviously teams will still tank towards the back end of the year. So, you know, that will probably buy the Kings another 3 or 4 wins. So I think 32-33 should be an expectation. Any less, and I think Vlade and Jaeger are probably gone at the summertime, if not sooner. I think the team probably caps out, I don't know, 36, 37 wins. That would be if Marvin Bagley was competing for Rookie of the Year. Harry Giles really did look like a little mini Kevin Garnett, and De'Aaron Fox, you know, looked like a Mike Conley. So I think that's probably max. I don't know if you're with me on that, but 36-37 is probably where they top out.
And I think 36-37 would be an absolute home run of a season. Nobody should expect playoffs from this group. And when you are a group that is not expecting playoffs, to me, there's no reason to why these guys can't give 100% effort when they know they're not expecting to play into May and June. The reason why I bring that up is we were talking about on the defensive end of the floor, Tim, the worries about having Bogey play the three. You said offensively that you think he can fit that, and I think he's proven that as well, and I agree with you there. The concerns are if he can guard on the defensive end of the floor. My counter to that was that let's say the Kings went out and got a better defender and plugged him into that three spot instead of Bogey, except in isolation situations. Are the Kings really that much better of a defensive team? My argument is no. I'd say the only chance this Kings team has of becoming a decent to good defensive team is that if the team completely buys into a team defensive scheme and mentality that emphasizes the athleticism and strengths and speed of your big men. Willie Cauley-Stein, Harry Giles, even Marvin Bagley, who needs to learn more on the defensive end. Those guys are athletic young pieces that can move, can rotate, and can potentially not just block shots, but change shots. That's the only way I can see this team getting better on the defensive end of the floor, and that requires 100% effort almost every single possession. There's no excuse why a group of 25-year-olds can't be giving you that, especially when they don't expect to be playing in May or June.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true as well. Like we said, Jaeger's got to adjust the system. What we saw last year, I think, was the guards didn't play defense. I think De'Aaron Fox had games where he was locked in, or even moments in games where you could just see his potential. Just, man, he would shut somebody down, and you could see that. Buddy Hield at times, especially towards the latter part of the season, really locked in defensively. Bogey always tries on defense. I don't think he really lacks effort there. But what we saw is kind of the guards were a bit of a sieve, and then that leads to your wings trying to recover and then your bigs trying to recover. So like you said, everyone has to step up and get better. The Kings, they had the highest frequency of three-pointers attempted against them last year, and opponents' three-point percentage improved the most when facing the Kings versus any other team. I think it improved by about 2% overall. So you got to start with the perimeter and then work your way towards the interior. I think Willie and Kufis, both solid interior defenders. Randolph doesn't play defense, but we all know that. You work your way inside out, got to stop the ball first and then work there. I will point out one thing, just going to put a caveat on there. In isolation defense last year, Andrew Wiggins was in the 66th percentile, meaning he was 66% better than most of the NBA. I don't have Bogey's number up, but just going to throw that out there.
I definitely appreciate numbers like that. I'm glad you brought up the guard play too. We saw, like you said, Buddy improve defensively from the start of last season to the end of last season. I want to talk about Buddy Hield to wrap this up here in just a little bit. But before I bring that up, you mentioned the guard play and De'Aaron Fox had games and flashes of playing good defense, but didn't really establish himself like that consistently. Sometimes NBA players work out together from different teams, but they'll work out together and spend time together over the summer, and I've said it a couple times before, I think my dream scenario of who would De'Aaron Fox match up with or meet with and play with over the summer, the first guy that comes to mind to me is Patrick Beverley, because with the speed and the quickness that De'Aaron Fox has, he can really be an antagonizing defender that just makes life difficult for ball handlers. I don't think there's any reason to believe he can't be that, but what does it take? It requires him to really buy into that system and be willing to go 110% on it, like Beverly does on a night-in, night-out basis. Is that something realistically you could see De'Aaron doing, and maybe even Yogi Ferrell off the bench?
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, getting them with any of those locked-in defensive guards or even defensive trainers. And I think, too, we have to give a little bit of grace. You know, he was a 19-year-old rookie, so even those flashes are encouraging. I would say on a night-to-night basis, he wasn't a good defender at all. In fact, he wasn't really a good player, but he showed flashes, and that's what you want from a kid who just joined the NBA. And like you said, we need to see building blocks, right? So with Buddy Hield, his rookie season, he was a terrible defensive player. The team was much better with him off the floor defensively and even offensively. And then you look at last year, and the team actually was better with him on the floor defensively. So you're just looking for growth, and as long as you continue to see growth, that's what eventually turns guys into quality starters. And then even above that, whether that's a max contract, all-star type players, yeah, get him with a trainer. He's got to focus in. And now that he's kind of learned the NBA, continue to grow those parts of his game.
Last thing for you, Tim. Again, you can follow Tim Maxwell at TimMaxwell22 on Twitter, because you'll get great takes and some bad takes every once in a while. But one of the takes you put out there, Tim, was a lukewarm take that you think Buddy Hield is going to be the best player on the Kings next season. I share some of that, not all of it. I think De'Aaron Fox, if he's added an outside jumper to his game, or at least established a more consistent outside shot, could become the Kings' best player pretty quickly, especially with what he showed in the clutch at the end of last season. But Buddy Hield to me is a major, let's put it, star ready to burst, in my opinion. If he is able to add the ability to create his own shot to his game, I think we're talking most improved player of the year caliber type player. What do you see from Buddy Hield that makes you so confident that he's going to create that big jump?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've been high on Buddy since the Kings acquired him, since the draft. I did some study on him when the Kings traded, obviously, DeMarcus Cousins for him, and I saw a lot of potential. And the great thing about Buddy is he's a gym rat, but he's not just a gym rat for his areas of expertise. And we all know he's a great shooter. He was the ninth best shooter from deep in the NBA last season. He was the eighth best shooter from deep as a rookie in the NBA. So we know he can shoot. He's going to continue to be able to shoot. And like we've both already mentioned here, he showed up defensively last year, especially in the second part of the year. So for me, it's a matter of, hey, the most popular super role players, if you will, in the NBA right now are 3-and-D players. And that's exactly what he's starting to become. Again, I don't think he's ever going to become a lockdown Paul George, Draymond Green type defender. But the fact that he started to become a better on-ball defender, and then now he can take shots. And we saw a little bit of a fadeaway, little 15-footer happening last year. So I agree with you. I think he can be in that most improved conversation. I don't really know where his scoring will fall, and a lot of that depends on opportunity. Will Dave Yeager give him 32 minutes a game, which I think he absolutely needs to play? And if that's the case, I think he'll be either our best player. If Fox takes a big jump, obviously, maybe Bagley's going to be great, but I'm predicting he'll be the best player on the Kings next year and also lead them in scoring.
That is Tim Maxwell from Sacktown Royalty. Again, you can follow him at TimMaxwell22 on Twitter. Tim, thank you so much for taking the time once again. Always a pleasure to have you here on the Locked On Kings podcast. We'll do it again around training camp, and then once we get into the start of next season, it's going to be exciting. I think you and I will both agree. The fact that Dave Yeager says the training wheels are completely coming off, and the fact that this year, with the Kings not having a 2019 first-rounder, that it's all about wins. And finally, we're going to get to see, hopefully, this young core go out there, play hard every single night, try and win, and that's really all Kings fans can ask for.
Absolutely, I'm excited.
Always fun to spend time with Tim. You can check out all of his work and all the great work at Sacktown Royalty, sacktownroyalty.com, or you can follow them on Twitter at @SacktownRoyalty. They're just a great blog to follow, and I meant what I said. I think they have the best connection that you could possibly have between a fan base and an organization. They just do that so well, have great personalities over there. Tim is absolutely one of them. We will definitely be having him on again in the near future. I know so many of you like to have him on, like his takes, good and bad, and he's always gracious with his time and always willing to come on. Next week, I got a lot of great stuff for you. I've got the G-Man Gary Gerald coming on. Other interviews are in the works for the next couple of weeks. There's a lot of great content coming for you on the Locked On Kings podcast, so I encourage you to be a part of it. If you have a quick second, I know I repeat myself a lot for those who have already done it. I appreciate you doing it, but if you haven't done it yet, it helps us out a lot. If you could either go to Stitcher or onto the iTunes store being pretty much the main one. If you could leave us a quick review, it could be just out of 5 stars really quick, or you can add a little blurb of what you like or don't like about me, what you like or don't like about the podcast, improvements that you want to see, any of that. We look at that, we read it closely, and it helps us adapt and change and make this podcast and this entire podcast network grow. So we certainly would appreciate if you could take a couple seconds to do that. It would help us out a whole lot. Have yourself a great and safe weekend. Going to be hot if you're in the Sacramento area, so keep that in mind. But next week, we'll come back. Great interviews for you. More content. Remember that question. Is a 33-win season considered a success to you, even if the Kings don't have a 2019 first-round pick? If this young core could win 33 games, that equals DeMarcus Cousins' win total or maximum wins that he had here with the Sacramento Kings, is that considered a success for you next season? Answer me that on Twitter, @MattGeorgeKHDK, or email it to me, mgeorge@sacklocalmedia.com. We'll revisit that and so much more, including projected starting lineups and all that fun, coming next week. Until then, my name is Matt George. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen here today. I will talk to you on Monday. Be good. This has been the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast,
part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.